Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, my good friend, comedian Murray Valeriano, talks about open-heart surgery and a day in the ICU.
I've been a vegetarian for 25 years. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs anymore. I surf. I work out every day. A year ago, I ended up having open-heart surgery. Full-on, open up. Not to get too graphic, but split the chest, rib cage wide open, shut off my heart for 5 hours, the whole night. And I have to say that because when people find out I have open heart surgery, some nimrod will go, oh yeah, what'd they go through your leg? Like, no, dude, open heart. It's in the title. Spoiler alert, I lived.
Today on the show, Murray Valeriano talks about a day in the ICU. Stay close.
Hey guys, this is Murray Valeriano, and you're listening to Storyworthy with my really good friend, Christine Blackburn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with Dixie De La Tour. Dixie De La Tour. Do you know what she's famous for, Murray?
Her cups?
Valeriano. The Dixie cup. That's funny.
Okay, good. I'm glad you went with that.
That's pretty good. No, she is famous for another storytelling show called Body Storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all sexy, racy stories.
Ooh.
And it's pretty body. I'll say that. Yeah, if you go back and listen to Storyworthy last week with Dixie De La Tour, you'll hear her talking about taking a friend of hers to, you know, kind of one of those sex dungeon, you know, where there's like something going on different floors.
Sure. Yeah.
And on one floor, there was a what they call a gangbang.
Oh, I'm familiar with the phrase, not the actual act.
And it was quite, I don't know what the word is exactly, but you know, it's all consensual. Everybody's
sure,
an adult and
sure.
Fair enough. So go back, you guys, and listen to Dixie De La Tour talking about body storytelling.
But not right now.
But not today.
Yes.
Because today I'm here with comedian Murray Valeriano. And
I've got a gangbang story.
He brings forth the topic. I was gangbanged. He brings forth the topic, a day in the ICU. A day in the ICU, and of course that would be referring to in the hospital. Yes, of course.
The intensive care unit.
That's what I would say, yes.
Not as exciting as a gangbang.
Not as fun. Not as fun, but sometimes the meds can be, you know,
yeah,
similar,
that's what they told
think.
You. You're going to get really good meds when you're in there.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I've been in the intensive care unit a couple of times in my life.
Sure.
The worst for me was when I had the birth of my child, and mm-hmm. I don't want to go through the whole story here, but I had a very difficult birth.
Okay.
And it was like a 35-year-old. I gave birth to a 35-year-old. It was a 35-hour-long.
Oof.
And I was in ICU, and then when my daughter was born, she was born floppy or not breathing.
Uh-huh.
So then she was in ICU.
That's what they call it, floppy?
Yeah, they call it floppy.
We could come up with a better name than that.
I know.
That is terrible.
Yeah, that is sad, right?
Yeah.
So she was born, it was like emergency C-section. Mm-hmm. So then I'm put in an ICU at Cedars, and then she's on the next floor up in the baby NICU ICU. And I couldn't see her for about 21 hours.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, it really sucked because I didn't see my baby.
Right, right.
You know, so my husband at the time, he was going back and forth between the floors trying to be with the baby who's in the NICU. Although she was only 6 pounds, but she was big compared to a lot of the babies in NICU.
Okay, sure.
Those babies are like
tiny,
under 2 pounds, et cetera. Really very sad. Anyway, and then he would come down to my floor and see me. Not a great ICU experience.
Well, I don't know who's writing poems about their ICU experience. I don't remember the Beatles writing anything.
By the way, you were on Storyworthy before
yes.
with a story called I Met a Beatle.
Oh, yeah, the Paul McCartney story.
When you
That's
met
right.
Paul McCartney outside the restroom.
That's right. Oh, my God.
Terrific.
Either great
story.
Memory or great researching on your part.
Terrific story. No, I got both, actually.
Okay.
I do both. But I will say that recently in August, I went back to Hartford, not back to, I'm not from there, but to my sister's house in Hartford, Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
where she had had an aneurysm, a brain aneurysm, and had a 7-hour brain surgery.
Oh, gee. All right. First of all, if anybody's listening to this, please remove all sharp objects from here.
This is really a depressing episode. Well, I'm just saying it was traumatic.
Seven hours.
She was in the ICU for like almost 3 weeks.
Wow, that's a long time. I was only in for 7 days.
Now, there were different levels of ICU. Mm-hmm. Like, there's the most serious, and then the second, she was in the middle level, but she wasn't in the real room. And the difference between the two of those was, like, she didn't have a bathroom that was separate.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It was just a curtain would hide the toilet. It was still wide open to the nurses in the room.
Dude, I know.
What? I'm serious.
No, I had to do that, too. I had my own, I don't want to go into all of it.
But my point is, I did appreciate being in the ICU in that all eyes were on my sister.
Like, right.
She had a tremendous amount of attention.
Sure.
Shout out to the Hartford Hospital up there. So I appreciated that.
Right.
But otherwise, yeah, I don't. I guess it's not going to be like hilarious.
No, the ICU nurses are great, man. That's one thing I learned. I'd never spent a night in the hospital in my life ever.
Wow.
I think I broke my shoulder. I was thinking about this on the way home over here. I broke my shoulder when I was 16 skiing. That's like really the extent outside being with my wife when she had a baby. But I wasn't. I was just laying on the couch watching Netflix.
When you broke your shoulder, you just had it set.
I had it set and put in a sling and went home.
Right, they didn't keep you
there. I'd spend the night. I never spent the night in the hospital ever.
Yeah, and it's really a hard place to spend the night because you don't really get much rest.
That's the funny thing is, like, the nurses are so loud.
It's ridiculous.
And they're just like, get some rest. And then clang, clang, bang, bang. It's they're yanking IVs out.
It's like they're working in that, you know, that factory where Laverne and Shirley work?
Yeah.
It's like they're working there.
Shots Brewery.
It's like so flipping loud.
Yeah.
And the lights are all on. It's 3 a.m.
And then one of the girls put a little glove on my penis. It was really.
Why?
It's an opening, Laverne and Shirley. It's in the opening.
Oh, right.
That was way too much of a stretch, man, but I had to try and lighten this shit up somehow.
Wow, that is a stretch, but very funny. Listen, you guys, we're going to get right to Murray's story because I'm super excited to hear it. But before we do, I wanted to remind you to follow me on social media, and I'll just leave it at that. That's all I'm saying.
That's it?
Okay, one more thing.
Okay.
I've started to do a lot more stand-up recently.
Oh, that's great.
In the last 6 months, and my schedule is up at ChristineBlackburn.com.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
So it's very simple.
Absolutely.
It's very simple. And do you have MurrayValeriano.com?
I have MurrayValeriano.com.
Which is really
nice. It was very
nice.
Easy to get.
Yeah, well, that's fortunate. Well, I don't know. Valeriano, is that an unusual name?
Valeriano, no, it's Italian. It's a first name in Mexico, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound that odd to me, Valeriano. I mean,
no?
I don't know.
It's funny. I did the Brea Improv and a couple weeks ago, and 14 Valerianos showed up. That were not at all related to me. They just...
Get the hell
I swear
here.
To God.
What are you... I mean, you're talking about you went in and you saw on the list at the door, on the door list, at the ticket person.
Ticket birth, yeah.
You saw Valeriano 14.
No, they came up to me after the show. And I was friends with one of them on Facebook. He found me. There's like a... You know, like there's the Royal Order of Bob, like a club for people named Bob.
Yeah.
I guess there's like maybe a small faction of Valerianos in Orange County. I don't know. But they have 14 and they came up after the show.
I like your son's name, Frank.
Frank, yes.
Frank Valeriano. He could be like in any nightclub, you know, in a jazz club.
Oh,
like,
sure.
He'll probably play the sax.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything could happen.
Yeah. His middle name is Vasilios.
Vasilios, that's Greek.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, my wife's Greek, and their thing is they're very superstitious. You know, they say traditional, but you have to name the son after the father's name. Which my dad's name is Frank. My dad's name is Francis. And when I told him that, he's like, don't name your kid Francis, man. I don't care. Yeah. I was like, I appreciate it, but don't do it. So I settled on Frank. And I like Frank.
Yeah, Frank is really clean. And I don't really know many children named Frank. I'm thinking I don't really know any.
No, I know. That's a great thing. Nice. It's a baby with an adult's name. I love it.
But it's sweet. Yeah. Oh, my buddy Brian Finkelstein named his little son Bruce.
Oh, nice.
And that's sort of an adult name.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's very sweet.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm happy you're here. Thank you for being here.
Thanks
for being here.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. The other thing you need to do is come down to Story Smash because we are having a good time.
Yeah, I was down there a couple, like 2 months ago. I came down to watch one.
And you saw? Did you see the show?
Yeah, I'm absolutely.
Sorry. Why do I forget that?
That's all right. You do one a month for how many years? It's okay.
Over 2 years now. So. We're on our 27th show. Our 27th show is going up on October 26th. So we're excited about that.
Nice.
The Hollywood Improv. Go to StorySmashShow.com for more information.
If I'm in town, I'll come. Sorry,
I would love you to. I would love you to.
When I was there, I think Judith Shelton won.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. And you know everybody at the Improv.
Oh, absolutely.
So for you to go in and just, you know, it's not like you'd just see me. You'd see.
Oh, yeah, no.
10 people you know.
I think I was performing in the other room. That's why it worked out really well.
Which is nice.
I came early to watch your show.
That's what I'm always telling people. Stop in, and then come on the show.
Yeah.
Anyway, you guys, he's here right now, Murray Valeriano. He is a comedian, as you may have guessed, and he's also a writer and a host of your own podcast, Road Stories. And that's been around for a long
11 years
time.
And running.
Longer than Storyworthy.
Running slowly.
No, it's a great podcast. It's all comedians, and you talk about road stories. So they just go right into a road story, meaning that something that happened on the road or something that happened in the comedy club.
On the way, all that
stuff. So it's really very entertaining and quick and funny. And now you do a new one, like a mini pod.
Yeah, I've been doing these mini pods because I'm on the road a lot by myself.
Yeah.
And crazy things happen, and then I don't want to wait a week to tell them.
And so do you just take a little Zoom mic?
I got an adapter for my iPhone that I plug in my microphone right into my iPhone, and then I just email it to my email and
a voice
mix
memo
it. Yeah, I used to use the voice thing.
That's
on
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it sounds great.
So smart.
And it's got a little dial. The adapter is only like, I don't know, $100, not even.
Wow, that's great.
It kind of sucks when I do it in the car, though. Yeah, a little interface. But when I do it in the car, they get a lot of noises from the 5 freeway.
yeah, you would. Now, even if you put it like right close to your mouth, like in the rearview mirror thing. I mean, in the visor thing.
I don't. We're gonna have to get a grip in here.
I'm just trying to help you out.
Get a sound department in my Honda Element.
I know that you have a podcast. I have a podcast. This is what we have in common.
Sure, absolutely.
I've also known you for probably 20 years.
Oh yeah, definitely. 19 at least.
So weird. Yeah, that we met when we were 7.
I know. I'm the age of my son now.
Really is weird. You guys can find Murray over on Twitter at Murray V, and also on Instagram at Murray V Comedy. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Murray Valeriano.
So I think this story needs a little bit of a backstory. Okay, so I've been a vegetarian for 25 years. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs anymore. I surf. I work out every day.
You surf or work out every day?
Yeah, sometimes both.
I know what you're saying, yeah.
Sometimes both. So naturally, that lifestyle is bound to turn around and bite me in the ass. So a year ago, I ended up having open heart surgery. Full on, open up. Not to get too graphic, but split the chest, rib cage wide open, shut off my heart for 5 hours the whole night. And I have to say that because when people find out I have open heart surgery, some Nimrod will go, "Oh yeah, would they go through your leg?" Like, no, dude, open heart. It's in the title. It's open. It's in the title, man. So I always have to preface that. I didn't want to be too gory with that. I'll try to keep the grossness out of this.
There are a lot of different heart conditions that they can do less invasive procedures, but you happen to have the one where they bust open your rib cage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just freaking go in.
Bypass machine.
Like you're with a forensic pathologist.
Yes.
Oh, wait,
I think
not the right word.
I don't know.
No, like you're with a, what's it called when they, like you're with an autopsy person.
Yes, a Quincy. We appeal to the younger audience, and I will appeal to the
Jack
older
Klugman,
audience.
As
yeah,
you,
Jack Klugman as Quincy on Monday nights. I don't know why I know it was on Monday nights. So I'm all Quincy'd up. But it worked out great. Spoiler alert, I lived. I had a valve in my heart that stopped working, basically. And the funny thing is, since you say that the minimally invasive stuff is, I was so healthy. I'm not, you know, Jack LaLanne or whatever, but I was so healthy that.
now you're really bragging.
I know.
Before we talk about age. You're Jack LaLanne, you're Schwarzenegger.
I guess I could have gone Schwarzenegger, huh? But he smoked. He smokes. He smokes cigars. But the thing is, I was so healthy, I could survive it. So that's why they did it. Mm-hmm. So if I was, 65 years old or had diabetes or weighed 350 pounds, they would have gone the other way. But they're like, hey, since you can survive this, this is the best way to fix it.
Yeah, because this way you'll live 50 more years
or whatever,
rather than just 10.
Absolutely. So they went in, they clipped it up. And the recovery was, I did 7 days in the ICU, like I said. And the recovery was rough. But it wasn't rough in the way, I thought it would be just the pain would be rough. Because I feel like you got an axe in your chest, But I think I psyched myself out so much for how miserable I was going to be and just really down the oxys and as much as they'd let me, that the pain wasn't really, it was really the rough part was just the emotional side of it and the psychological side, even my ego. It was just this real kind of roller coaster of emotions. One of the side effects of open heart surgery, and I think Robin Williams talked about this before he died, is spontaneous crying for no reason. Just no reason at all. I had a Friday poker game I would have after I got out of the hospital for like 4 weeks. And I would just be dealing the cards and be like, all right, raise, and then start crying for no reason. And then, of course, my poker buddies would make fun of me, and that's fine, because I was also holding a teddy bear, because you hold the teddy bear against your chest when you laugh to ease the pain. So it just an emotional wreck through the whole thing. And I had a terrible night. It would have to be like 3 days into the ICU. And it's not like I thought ICU is just, I'm going to lay in bed for 3 weeks. I'm going to take, everybody's like, you said, you're going to get the good drugs. And it's not, man. They want you up and walking. They shut my heart off for 5 hours. They had me up and walking at 8 a.m. the next day.
Wow.
And it wasn't like I was skipping down the hall. There were like 13 people around me. I had a walker. I had an IV tree of either 25 or 35 IVs. I had IV in my neck, my arms, my wrists, all over. I had more needles in me than Keith Richards. It was just everywhere. And again, I'll spare the gory details, but I think it was the third night. It was just a rough day of pain and body not working and nurses coming in and yanking things out of my body and throwing things in my body. And I had a pace, like a heart pacer electrode in my heart. And this one nurse like walked in and without telling me, wanted to see how my heart was doing without it. So she just turned it off. Wow. I was just talking to my wife and all of a sudden I'm like,
what in the world? She didn't say that was going to happen.
No.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an interesting nurses, by the way, are fantastic.
For the most part.
I have such a respect, but I also learned that there are two types of nurses.
Yeah.
There's the really kind of, okay, Christine, how are you feeling today? All right, we're going to need to take your temperature and get some blood. Okay?
That's the kind I want.
Yeah. Then there's the punch the clock. All right, it's 9 o'clock. Let's go. Take your meds. Come on. We got to go for a walk, blah, blah, blah. And so that's kind of the way that woman was. So she wasn't my favorite. So just a series of bad. And then, so I ended up staying up till like 1 a.m., 2 a.m. or something like that. And I had, like I said, I had all these IVs in my arms and all that. And this one IV in my wrist and back of my hand got twisted. And it just hurt. And it was ripping my skin. And the previous mentioned nurse comes in. And she looks at it. She's like, oh, yeah, we're going to have to take that out. Rip. Ugh. Ripped it out. Then she put like this little X-ray machine on my hand. And she's like, okay, it can handle another one. So we're just going to go ahead and put in another one. And I lost it. I just broke down. I couldn't handle it anymore. I was just done. My mom was with me. My wife stayed with me during the day.
Yeah.
And then my mom would come in and they would tag out. And then my wife would go home and pick up Frank, our son, and then take care of him. And then my mom would stay with me through the night. And it worked out great for two things. A, I was never alone. And B, the idea of my wife and my mom in the same house without me there buffering, oh, the stress would just blow out another artery. Like I couldn't do it. I just my fucking heart would give up altogether. So I just broke down. I cried and held my mom's hand. It was like I was 8 again. I just couldn't do it, man. It just my whole, everything was just crushed. My whole will, I don't want to say my will to live, but just everything was just crushed. It was a terrible night. So I get up the next morning, and by the time my wife usually comes in the morning, I've already got up and walked. I had to do breathing exercises. I tried to, at this point I wasn't allowed to eat or drink anything, but eventually I would try to eat or drink something. And she came in, I think I was still sleeping because I'd been up till 3, and she's like, what's going on? I'm like, I had a really, really terrible night. And, she's so great with the tough love. She's like, oh, that stinks. But that was last night. Let's go. Let's go for a walk. Come on. This is a new day. We're alive. Let's do it. I'm like, I gotta get some sleep. I gotta get some sleep. So then this cat rolls in, this volunteer rolls in, and he's like, Mr. Valerian, how do you say it? just call me Murray. He's like, I got to take you down for x-rays. For x-ray, we got to go get your chest x-ray. And I'm like, all right. So he just stacks all these IVs on the wheelchair and, hooks them up and all the other things that are connecting me, helps me out of bed. I'm in my 40s. I'm going to need to help out of bed. It's a drag. Gets me in the wheelchair, just wheels me down the hallway. And the ICU at the UCLA Medical Center is where I had it, is either on the top floor or a very high up floor. So we had a long ass elevator ride down. Like, I remember getting down at the bottom and I felt like I was in the basement of the hospital. It looked like, the ship from Aliens. Yeah. It was just like this long cold, sterile hallway, and he wheels me into the x-ray room. And again, I remember it being like the size of a phone booth. I don't even remember the x-ray technician. I don't even think he came out from behind his little guard area, you know? And this guy helped me out of the wheelchair, and he had to hold me up because I was so weak I couldn't stand up. Get the front of my x-ray, get the back of my x-ray. And I had to get the side of my x-ray where I had to lift my arms over my head, which was a pain worse than you can imagine. And he like had to hold my arms up for me to get in, and I like collapsed on him. And we got that done, and he sat me back down, and I'm sure he said the obligatory, you know, see, that wasn't so bad. He was so chipper. He probably made small talk. I don't think I said two words the whole time, except maybe a thank you or something like that. So he wheeled me out, and he wheeled me back to the elevator, and we went up to our floor, and he says, we get to my floor, and he goes, you mind if we take a detour? And, excuse me a second. I didn't think I would get emotional at this point. I thought it'd be later. I said, I got nowhere to be. I'm not going anywhere. Like, I'm just going to go back to bed. So instead of turning right, we turn left. And he takes me down these long hallways. You know, these hallways are just winding, and it's the hospital. And there was nobody in the hallways. It was really weird, you know, and it just had that really kind of cold.
It's an old hospital.
Yeah, and it's got that cold feeling. Yeah,
high ceilings.
Yeah, and it was just left and then right, and then down another hallway, then down another hallway, all over the place. And then he rounds the corner, and he stops in my wheelchair right in front of this beautiful picture window. It overlooked all of the west side of Los Angeles. It was a beautiful May day. Not a cloud in the sky. The sun was beating through. He locked my wheelchair and he sat down. He's like, I just thought you should see this. And I looked. I could see the ocean. And I kind of lifted my hand and I said, that's El Porto. I surf there sometimes. And I looked and I said, that's my neighborhood. I live over there. And right next to my house, you can see my son's school. And we just stared, didn't say a word for, I don't know, 6, 7 minutes, 8 minutes. Just let the sun just kind of, it was the warmest part in the whole place was just the sun coming through the window. And we sat and we watched. I told him, you know, my son's going to be playing Abe Lincoln next week. And we just sat and he's like, you going to go see the play? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to miss it. And so we sat and we watched out the window for a few more minutes. And he's like, you know what? I need to get you back before we both get in trouble. I said, okay, sure. Back down those long, cold hallways. I don't think we said anything to each other. And got back to my room. He helped me out of the bed. He put the IVs back up on the trees and kind of got me in bed and shook my hand. Said, I'll see you later.
How old was this guy?
I don't know, 40s, 50s maybe?
40s, 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, somewhere around our age.
And a volunteer.
And he left, never saw him again. My wife was like, how was that? Like, yeah, it was all right. She's like, how was the x-ray? I was like, it was kind of sore, kind of hurt a little bit. And she's like, do you want to rest? It's like, nah, I want to go on a walk. So we got up and we did our walk, and eventually I got healed and made it to see my son's play.
Unbelievable.
The next week. I remember telling my wife, like, that was my first goal, was to go see him be Abraham Lincoln in his play, his first play. And that morning she's like, are you up to it? I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to look like the dying dad in the auditorium.
Yeah.
She's like, eh, you're gonna, don't worry about it.
Were you in a walker or a wheelchair, or how did you just go really slow? Or
we drove, and then like my wife kind of helped me walk in.
Yeah,
and we were only like a block away from the school.
It's scary being in public when you've just come out of a surgery because you're afraid like anybody's going to touch you or bump you or knock you over or something.
And most of the people, it was a class play, so most of the people we kind of knew from the class, and they kind of knew what was happening.
Yeah.
And they're all stoked to see me, and I was stoked to be there. And I remember one of the kids is like walks up and he goes, you look terrible.
Yeah, kids are so
and then
honest.
The mom is like, stop it. I'm like, it's fine. I do. Look terrible.
Yeah,
I look
kids
terrible.
Are so in the moment, aren't they?
Yeah.
And so who was that guy? We need to figure this out. Did you write a letter? I want you to write a letter to the mean about the mean nurse. You need to write a letter about the good volunteer.
Man, there's so many letters I should write. There's so many great nurses,
honestly,
too.
Honestly, there's something to be said for a volunteer that took that extra time like that. Like, that's so kind.
I know. And it's so, who knows how many times he's done it before, but how many people look out that window and see their house
and see
their son's school and see all the reasons you have to live.
I wonder if he sensed that you were, I mean, obviously you're down, but I wonder if he sensed like, you know, this guy's been on his own for a couple of hours. Nobody's around. He needs to get some air, but you can't go outside. So at least get him some sun.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure I was not in the best spirits and just very, you know, frumpy and down. First of all, I'm hugely sedated.
Yeah.
Miserable.
Yeah.
So.
And then was it from there, from that point, was it kind of a straight trajectory getting better? Or did it keep going down and up and down?
Again, in hindsight, I think it, not to sound so perfectly poetic, but it definitely kept going up. I mean, there were definitely days where it was down, you know, especially after I got home.
Yeah.
There are days where you just feel like for no reason, you just feel like you just got hit by a Mack truck.
Your diet was so good. Did you have to alter your diet in any way?
As a matter of fact, when they let me out of the hospital, they said, usually this is where we tell people to exercise and eat healthy, but
you do.
See you around.
Is this genetic or not genetic?
No, they can't tell me why. They can't tell me why it happened. They can't, every time they think it's chronic, they think it's the other, and then... And it took them like 5 weeks to diagnose it because I was so healthy and young and I was having trouble breathing that they kept checking my lungs.
Right.
And then I ended up on the road and they found out it was this valve that was leaking fluid into my heart.
Wait, you were on the road
into my lungs.
And got sick on the road?
Yeah, I kept going back to the doctor and he'd be like, all right, look, take this inhaler, come back in a week if it doesn't work. Take this inhaler, come back in a week if it doesn't work.
They were totally going for your lungs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when they found out I got pissed, and then they told me, like, well, yeah, you're under 50, you're in great shape. The heart is the 10th thing we look at.
Oh, my God. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
No, my nephew had heart problems when he was only like 35, but he's also a smoker, so I don't know if there's a correlation.
Sure.
I mean, it can happen at any time, but yours really came out of the blue.
I was surfing one day and I was on the table, I don't know, 5 weeks later.
When did you first have, where were you when you first had a feeling of, oh God, this is, something's wrong?
I was surfing and I had been surfing for a few days where I would paddle out and then I would just get so winded.
Yeah.
I would just catch a wave and go home. And I just thought, oh, I had the flu or something. Cause I just done a month on the road.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm wiped out if I had the flu. And then one day I paddled out on a very small day and I couldn't catch my breath and I started to get tunnel vision and pass out. And you know, I've been surfing for over 20 years. It's the first time I've ever looked up to the lifeguard tower to see if anybody was there. Cause nobody was around me, but I just started just breathing in and getting oxygen into my lungs as best I could and stayed awake and didn't pass out. And I'm like, all right, something's up. This isn't. And then that started that whole, all right,
paddle in, you get your board, you walk to the car and you drive
home
and you say to your wife, Mary, problems.
Yeah, definitely.
And she says, well, let's go. Or what?
I'd set up a doctor's appointment.
You didn't go to urgent care?
No. Yeah. No. All right. So speaking of urgent care, So 4 or 5 weeks of all that, try this, we'll x-ray this lung. I went to a pulmonary specialist where I breathed into a tube for 2 hours. It was...
Oh, brother.
And so that guy was smart enough to go, Dr. Wattel was smart enough to just say, hey, listen, we're going to get a CT scan, see what's going on here. I said, I'm going on the road tomorrow.
Wow.
Is that cool? He's like, yeah, it's Thursday. We're getting it done at 5. Results come in on Friday. Everybody goes home early. I'll just call you on Monday with the results. I'm like, fine. So I get in the... Go home, fly to Seattle. Then I got to catch a puddle jumper over to the east side of Washington. I get off in Seattle. My phone's blowing up. It's the doctor.
Shit.
He's like, something's leaking in your heart. We got to figure this out.
Back.
Get to a hospital right now. Get to a, you know,
you're kidding me.
And I'm like, well, hold on. I'm like, he's like, are you having trouble breathing? Does your heart? I'm like, yes, I've been telling you this for 4 weeks. So why is all of a sudden this an emergency? And then also, you know, I'm headlining this casino. Like, this is, I'm 4 hours. I got to go on stage.
Yeah, hundreds of people bought tickets.
Yes.
And you're there.
Yes. And if I'm going to the hospital, I need the money.
So what are you going to do?
So I call my wife. She's like, come home right now. And I'm like, look, I got a 20-minute puddle jumper. Let me just figure out. I'll figure it out in my brain what's going on, and I'll figure out what I'm going to do. I remember I even had the inhaler still with me, lay on the trying to suck on that for to help breathe. And I get, and the doctor's like, I can't make you go to the hospital, but if it keeps happening, at least go to an urgent care or something. I'm like, fine. So I land, I go to the hotel, I check in. I'm like, hey, do you guys have a gym in here?
In Washington.
In Washington.
You're going to go to the gym?
Well, it's just something I always ask.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's something I always ask. And at that time, I was still going to the gym a little. I wasn't running or anything, but I was lifting weights the best I could.
I know, but the doctor just told you you're supposed to be at the hospital.
Well, he said she should go to the hospital.
Okay,
good. But the next question was, is there a urgent care? And I don't even know what an urgent care is. And the woman goes, yeah, there's one right there across the street.
Oh, wow. Interesting. And so,
I don't know if you believe in signs or God or the universe.
Damn straight.
I was just like, you know what? Fuck the gym. I'm going to go over this urgent care. And I went over and I showed him I showed the doctor my email, and he took an EKG. And actually, he's like, we got to get you to the hospital right now.
Oh, my God. Seriously. That is so dramatic.
Yeah, I know, man.
So now you're in the hospital in Spokane?
Not Seattle. Some small town, Richland, maybe? Richland, Washington?
That I've never heard. That's
Paso?
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you have to go to their hospital.
Now I'm in their hospital, meeting with a cardiologist.
Yeah.
The guy called in because he was off on that Friday.
Right. So it's Richland, Washington. How many people are, right, shout out, by the way?
Yeah, Richland, all the listeners in Richland. And he came in. I remember the first thing he said, he's like, do you do drugs? I'm like, no. It's like, do you smoke? It's like, no. He's like, your heart is enlarged by however what it is. I'm like, what? And he told me what was going on. And I knew it was going to be serious. And I've always tried to put this into a joke. And I've been able to talk about this in my act and stuff. You know, I don't get as emotional as I did telling that story. By the way, I've never told that story before. So I got about 10, 15 minutes on the whole thing.
Yeah.
And but I've been trying to do it because when he told me what was that, it was still kind of pops and buzzes. I don't know what a mitral valve is. I don't know if my aortic valve is 8 centimeters. All I know is that's when women start crowning in the movie. Like, I don't know,
I know, what you mean. I know
any of that.
I hate having to learn medical shit.
Oh,
I don't
want to absolutely
know.
Absolutely.
I also don't want to know about politics, but okay, don't want to talk about that. So go ahead.
But I remember, you know, in those movies, like, you've seen those movies, I'm like, ER, they're like, you know, you have this, but we're really, you know, positive about the treatments. And if we caught it early, and we think if we put together, we can do this. And, you know, we're going to try our best. And very positive.
Yeah.
I knew it was serious when I asked my doctor, like, is it serious? And he's like, yeah, you're going to die. Like, no sugarcoating, no.
He said that.
Yeah. He's like, you're going to die if you don't get surgery, like, within the next 2.5 weeks.
Oh, my God.
And
that's the guy in Richland, Washington.
Yes.
Okay. Here's the other letter we're going to write. No, I want to write it to the guy in L.A. Who was the guy who was giving you an asthma?
A couple different ones. Through my insurance, I was going to different.
See. That makes me just so angry that they didn't catch that before you got on a plane.
The other thing is that doctor up in Richland, who I like because he saved my life, is
let's write
as
him
harsh
a letter.
As he is, as harsh as he is. I'll see him. I'm going to be up there in a couple of weeks. I'll see
him. Good.
He's the one who said, I can't believe nobody's caught this. He's like, you have a lawsuit on your hand. I'm like, I'm going to live first and then we'll figure out the lawsuits and stuff on the back end.
I can't believe it. But then we have to think about, you know, to be fair, you had been having trouble breathing and you kept letting it slide.
Okay.
Is
you going to write
true?
Me a letter?
Is What's that true on? Or is that not true?
Well, I don't know if I let it slide, but I didn't know how serious it was in the beginning.
Yeah.
I thought it was a...
Yeah. Well, you'd never
I thought. I thought it was
never.
The flu. I had the flu. I was on the road for a month.
Of course.
I thought I was just tired.
Yeah.
My buddy Graham Elwood saw me one day. I'm like, I'm having trouble breathing. He's like, ah, oh, you probably just got that thing that's going around.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, you're probably right.
Oh. So now you're out. Now you're fine. Do you take...
Now, today?
Do you take heart medications? Blood thinners.
I have to take one heart medication. It pisses me off because I've never had to take medications in my life. And I didn't have any clogged arteries. I didn't have any plaque. Yeah. I didn't have any of that. None of that. Because they have to explore, you know, when it's not immediate surgery, like it has to be done that day, you just go through all these tests.
Right.
And I got to admit, it was kind of good for my ego.
Yeah.
Because every time I go.
You're so healthy. Yeah.
As well. And then people would be like, oh, you're so young.
It's true.
You're so young. Like, tell that to the audience. They think I'm a grandpa.
Well, you could be that too.
My Lawrence Welk references, I guess.
Yeah. That and Jack LaLanne, but I used to have that with medicines, you know, about like, you know, I'm too good for medicine, or I don't need that. I don't take anything. I don't need anything. But there are times, obviously, that you have to have certain medicines because it alleviates the rest of you from, in other words, it's not necessarily that it's not altering your mental state. It's literally, you know, taking swelling down on something
or
taking care of inflammation or something that is affecting something else. So
I have to take one pill in the morning because I have high blood pressure just in the morning.
Yeah.
But I never had high blood pressure before.
So
that's what kind of pisses me off. But my cardiologist, she's great. She's like, look, it's not broke. Just fucking run with it. How hard is it to take a pill every morning?
Right. No, it's nothing. I had my kidney out. Remember, I had that. Mm-hmm. It was a really a shocking diagnosis, a very rare thing. And one day I, you know, randomly had a pain. And whatever the point is get my kidney out. And then have to go through chemo and everything because it was cancer. And then when I was done with the chemo, I said to my doctor, okay, you know, now what's the regimen? And he goes, nothing. You know? And I'm like, nothing. And he goes, no, nothing.
Really?
Nothing. Yeah.
Just live.
Nothing to do. Yeah. You know, and I always felt that in a way, like when I knew the problem with my kidney, we were taking it out, et cetera. In the back of my mind, I was like, I know you only need one kidney.
Right, right.
So I always kind of treated it a bit laissez-faire. Is that the word, laissez-faire?
Yeah, I think so. I think I could work there.
But the heart, you only got the one.
Yeah.
And it's like at our age, I mean, God forbid you would read in an obituary somewhere, you know, well, you know, died of a heart attack.
Right.
And then you'd be like, that sucks, man. Well, he's 52. What's for lunch?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's horrible.
Right.
But it's also not completely out of the ballpark.
It's not. We're getting that, you know.
To that age.
Yeah,
and
people die, man. Like, that's just the thing. We're all going to die.
My sister got, you know, this out of the blue aneurysm thing. And it was like, what? And of course she could have died.
Sure.
Of course she could have. Why not? You know what I mean? Who do you think you're special?
Right, absolutely.
So it really, when you do go through a serious illness, you definitely have epiphanies. And I do think you live your life a little differently.
Yeah,
little differently than you did before, especially if you have kids, because there's a weight in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, you got there's a lot of skin in the game.
Yeah.
As it were.
Yeah.
Because it's more complicated when there's more people involved, you know, the people you're caring for.
I had this discussion with my friend Walker, and he said, all right, so, and this could be long and outdrawn and boring. If I can't articulate it right, feel free to cut it out. He's like, what was your big epiphany? What have you learned? And I actually do a joke about it now, but I won't do that. I don't think I've learned anything. I wasn't afraid of dying. But I also think that those epiphanies come from the guy who has the heart attack at 52, who eats Burger King every day, smokes a pack of Marlboros, you know, weighs 350 pounds. Is like his epiphany is like, oh, I gotta stop smoking. I gotta stop eating horribly. And as you do that, you realize, oh, I'm smoking and eating horribly because I'm miserable at my job. Oh, so I'm gonna quit my job and find a new job. And that epiphany kind of progresses and snowballs.
Yeah.
So as a person who lives a healthy life and I love my job and I love my family, there was no real life choices I need to make.
Like, I need to hang on.
Right. Not like I'm living the perfect life or anything.
No, but that's a very accurate thing to say, because when my kidney, that whole thing, it got me to Los Angeles. That's
right.
What put me on stage to begin with.
Sure.
You know, like, why not?
Mm-hmm.
But for you, I hear what you're saying. You're living a pretty good life. It's charmed in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And you are working. And you have a ton of friends. Mm-hmm. And so what are you going to change? What are you going to do? Nothing.
Right.
You just keep carrying on.
And then the other people always ask, are you pissed off that you live this healthy life? And I'm like, no. Because my one small epiphany was, you don't live a healthy life to avoid this stuff. You live a healthy life to survive it.
That's so mature. That's very, very insightful and mature.
Okay.
It is.
It's got scared.
It is. In other words, no. Well, we're all going to die.
Coming around, man.
And how's it going to go down?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How's it going to go down? And at that time, are you going to be on the floor or on the road or wherever you are dying, and you're going to think, shit, man, I shouldn't have worked so hard.
Right.
Or I should have quit that job. Or I shouldn't have voted for Trump.
Right.
Or I should have, you know what I mean? What are you going to be thinking at that moment? And I'm with you. I mean, at least I am now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what else I could. I mean, I could, if I had more employment, that would be good.
Oh, absolutely.
If I had more money, if I had more certain things. But what I'm doing, the steps I take every day, I wouldn't have any regrets.
All right. I mean, the good thing was, I mean, it's...
Maybe take more chances. How about you? Because you know a lot of people. You do a lot of things. You go a lot of places. Mm-hmm. You do take chances. Like, even right now with Road Stories, I mean, maybe you don't care, but you got to care on some level. You know, you took a chance to do these mini pods.
Sure.
Or whatever. So yeah. There's always, like,
Taking chances are, yeah,
we're pushing
definitely.
All the time.
Yeah, I always got to take chances. I think we take chances. It's going to sound way artsy-fartsy, and feel free to kick me in the neck for saying this.
Okay.
But I think we take chances every time we go on stage.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. You have a good idea, but you never know what's going to happen.
You take a chance, but you also, for the most part, the comedians I know, they don't care. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
true.
If you have a bad set, it stings and it's upsetting, but first of all, you're never as bad as you thought you
right.
were. You're never as good as you think you are, but also, it's going to go away, that feeling. Do you think?
No, I agree.
Because you can't put weight on it.
And once you become a professional and have done it for a long time, I had a bad set 3 weeks ago. And I remember I just looked at the other comic who opened for me and I just laughed.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, and she knew what I was laughing at. I'm laughing at because these people are not digging what I'm laying down, and I got 20 more minutes. And then we laughed about it.
There are two ways to go, as I understand mm-hmm. it. And I haven't done nearly as much comedy as you have, but even on stage storytelling or anytime you're on stage, you either can commit to the act and just blaze through,
mm-hmm.
or you can just stop everything and say, okay, what gives you guys?
Right. I think there's an argument for both.
So what would
you, I don't like the steamrolling part. I don't think that's a good
to just keep going forward.
Yeah, I think because if I've watched people steamroll through a bad set, they do their set, they don't have the same emotions behind it and enunciations, and then they blast through it, and so they do a half hour of material in 22 minutes.
And you know? Can tell they're angry.
Oh yeah, totally.
You can tell they're pissed because they're not even waiting for responses; they're just plowing through.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you stop and address it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes.
And then if you feel like, well, look, if it's not funny, well, then it just wasn't meant to be.
Right, and I know, you know, I've been working on this new hour is almost done,
and
it's based on. It's not based on the open heart surgery, but it's the through line.
Yeah.
And it's almost done. And I know it works.
Yeah.
So I'm headlining a benefit at a rich yacht club the other night. And they're, usually when those bad sets happen, it's usually not the comic. It's something in the situation.
Yeah.
You know, if they're a comic worth their weight.
Because the material has been fleshed out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously been worked on for months.
Sure.
And so those things are polished. It could be the situation in the room.
Yeah. So like the situation at this yacht club was they took a break between the opener and me and served a buffet of desserts.
So nobody was so, back at, so they didn't want to do comedy.
No matter how good you are at comedy, you're never going to be more fun than a Sunday, than a free hot fudge Sunday.
Plus they just want to be out at that point.
Yeah.
They're all getting sugar. They're all getting bumped up on sugar.
Yeah.
They just want to hang out with their friends and chat. They should never have taken a
break. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I did a show. It was Story Smash, my game show. I go around and do corporate events now
fun.
And then.
That's fun.
It's really good. I wish I had more gigs. But anyway, I was at this gig and they made it the last gig of the day before like the formal dinner.
Right.
So the formal dinner's at 7:00, but come on over to Story Smash at 5:00.
Yeah, totally.
And so, well, when are we going to get ready for the formal part?
Right.
So they just had bad timing. Yeah. And that's, anybody would fail in those slots.
I did I've hooked up with this booker who does a lot of fundraisers and I like doing fundraisers.
Good,
we did a great cancer benefit a couple of weeks ago.
Oh,
and
nice.
That was, so I, it was the first time I'd done my heart material in front of cancer survivors and it was really great. It was great.
Yeah.
But I also did on that same run, I did a dog shelter. I did a benefit and between the comic who opened for me, who happened to be the booker and me, they had a parade of dogs you could rescue that they walked through. And then they showed a video of drowning dogs.
Wow.
And they're like, here's Murray.
Because they're trying to put together a show, but they don't understand that you have to keep comedy by itself.
Yes, absolutely.
You can't separate the bands and the...
Yeah, totally.
You can't do that. People think like, oh, we want, you know, a variety show. There'll be singing, dancing, some sketch comedy and poetry. And it's like, no. No. You're getting people ready for one thing and one thing only. What's it going to be? You
want
to see Celine Dion? You want to see a singer? Or do you want to pick out a dog?
Right, absolutely. I agree 100%.
Or do you want to watch a video? Who does want to watch a video on drowning dogs?
Nobody. It was terrible.
Were
they were showing it because of what happens when dogs are left behind and not taken care of. And, You know, people are rescuing him. They're rescuing him out of the thing, but it was...
And now your favorite bitch and mine, Murray Valeriano.
It was just like, I told the booker, like, next time, save the video for after comedy.
You are a success, and you are moving forward, and you're always doing good things.
Oh, I hope so.
I'm so glad we're friends.
I'm glad we're friends, too.
Really, it's you've led an amazing life already, and you continue to do such good work. And I'm inspired.
Oh,
I really am.
Well, that's sweet. Thank you for saying that.
I'm super inspired. You guys follow Murray over there on Twitter at Murray V and also on Instagram at Murray V Comedy. And follow me over there as well at All Things Storyworthy. That's it. I keep it very simple.
Very simple.
Storyworthy.
Can I plug one date?
I'm going to plug the date.
Oh, okay. No,
you guys, this weekend, this is exciting. October 23rd.
23rd, I believe, yes.
Yeah, you'll be in Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. The Jewel Box Theater. That's a great theater and it's a great event. So you guys go see Murray Valeriano.
Tickets are only $10.
That's a
Keeping it really cheap.
All right, you guys, we got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning into Storyworthy today. Don't forget to check out the website, storyworthypodcast.com, and, you know, do all the things that you need to do to keep me afloat. You know what I mean. All right, you guys, one more time, on behalf of the very talented and healthy Murray Valeriano, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.